Welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, April the 10th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here is our first story. It's entitled, School Board OKs Plans for Eisenhower Gym, Irving HVAC. Construction costs for both projects could reach $10 million. It's written by Elizabeth Kelsey of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Dubuque Community Schools officials plan to pursue renovation projects that will bring a new gymnasium to one elementary school and air conditioning to another. Board members this week approved contracts with Origin Design for architectural and engineering services for the gym addition project at Eisenhower Elementary School and mechanical/HVAC upgrades at Irving Elementary School. Together, construction costs for both projects could reach $10 million, although costs are not yet finalized. Both projects would have been funded by up to $150 million general obligation bond narrowly rejected by voters in November. The bond would have paid for a new middle school as part of the district's efforts to consolidate from 3 to 2 middle schools, along with the Eisenhower addition, air conditioning at schools like Irving that are not fully climate controlled, and other district projects. Now the district plans to use 1 cent sales tax funds to pay for both the Eisenhower and Irving projects, according to Superintendent Amy Hawkins. School Board President Kate Parks described both projects as urgent upgrades that the district needs to complete despite the bond's failure. We absolutely had to move forward on those two items, she said after Monday's meeting. These are investments that are absolutely necessary. Board documents state that the Eisenhower project will include the addition of a regular-sized gym with a roll-up divider. Ahead of the bond vote in November, district officials shared early concepts for the gym addition, which showed it being constructed along a bus loop on the lower end of the school. Eisenhower currently has the largest enrollment of the district's elementary schools with 595 students as of the fall of 2023, but lacks a separate lunch/multipurpose room and gym. Eisenhower Principal Andy Ferguson said that creates challenges when it comes to scheduling lunch periods and gym classes. Currently, some homeroom classes are paired together for gym class because of the lack of space and available time in the gym, creating large class sizes. Lunch periods are also short and crowded to get all the students through the cafeteria so that gym classes can resume. With this project, we'll be able to lengthen lunch time so students can have a little bit more relaxed setting for lunch, Ferguson said. Work also is slated to include demolition of part of the school's current art room to accommodate expansion of the kitchen. The remainder of the current art room would be converted into a multi-use space. Our little kitchen is so small right now, our lunch staff are almost tripping over each other, Ferguson said. We have warming trays stacked out into the gym because there's not enough space. According to board documents, also proposed as part of the project are a new mechanical room and new spaces to relocate existing gym offices, the music room, and a combined music/art classroom. A secure entrance, upgrades to the building's intercom system, and upgrades to a wheelchair lift into the current gymnasium also are proposed, among other work. District Buildings and Grounds Manager Rob Powers said those aspects of the project will be discussed during the design process and the budget will dictate their inclusion. The main focus is the gym addition and kitchen expansion in order to take the pressure off of the current cafeteria, he said. Meanwhile, the HVAC project at Irving will bring air conditioning to the entire building. Currently, about 35% of the school is air conditioned. Other district schools that are not fully air-conditioned are Bryant, Hoover, Lincoln, and Marshall Elementary Schools, Jefferson and Washington Middle Schools, and the Alta Vista campus. Dubuque Senior High School is currently 95% air-conditioned and will be fully so by this fall when a multi-year renovation project concludes. Powers said the district chose to address air conditioning improvements at Irving first due to the age of some of its equipment, in addition to the size of its student body. Irving had 407 students as of the fall of 2023, giving it the fourth largest enrollment among elementary schools in the district, in a tie with Table Mound, and the largest that is not fully air conditioned. The project also proposed to include new LED lights and ceilings, upgrades to the fire alarm and intercom system and plumbing improvements. The engineering and architectural services contracts the board approved for the Eisenhower and Irving project Monday are for $440,000 and $441,000, respectively. Those numbers are based on estimated construction cost of $4.5 million for the Eisenhower project and $5.5 million for the Irving project, according to board documents. Powers said the district is now working on a preliminary design and cost study for both projects and plans to present more accurate cost estimates to the board by the end of May. Board documents state that construction on both projects is expected to begin in spring or summer of 2025. Work should be substantially complete by August of 2026. Our next article is entitled Dubuque to Raise Water Sewer Rates. Capital improvement projects, efforts to replace lead service lines contribute to increases. It's written by Andy Piper of the Telegraph Herald. Dubuque's water and sanitary sewer rates are set to increase in fiscal year 2025 beginning July the 1st as several major system upgrades are scheduled to begin. As enterprise funds, the Water Department and the Water Resource and Recovery Center receive minimal taxpayer support and instead utilize user fees as their primary revenue source. The Water Department rates are set to rise 12% when the fiscal year begins July 1. That is a monthly increase of $4.32 for the 6,000 gallons per month the average household uses. Dubuque's average monthly rate will rise to $39.06, which ranks fourth of the seven comparable limestone softened facilities in Iowa. West Des Moines will charge the highest at $44.21. Council Bluffs will have the lowest at $32.40. Sanitary sewer rates will rise 9% or $4.50 per month for the average household. Dubuque's average monthly rate of $54.82 will be the ninth highest of Iowa's 11 largest cities. Des Moines' rate ranks highest at $60.08. Waterloo has yet to announce its 2025 rate, but charged $36.26 in fiscal year 2024. Three capital improvement projects are related to the bulk of the Water Department's fee increase. The PFAS Forever Chemicals Reduction Project will cost $2.3 million in fiscal year 2025 of the $4.6 million project spread over 3 years. The city uses two deep wells and two shallow wells for its water supply. The deep wells so far have tested PFAS free, but the shallow wells have exceeded federal levels. The interim fix has been mixing deep and shallow well water to remain in compliance with the water standards. The department plans to drill another deep well. The original strategy when we found PFAS in 2022 was to use the deep wells as much as possible, but there are certain times of the year, especially in the summertime, when those deep wells don't have the capacity to meet the demand, Water Department Director Christopher Lester said. So we supplement them with the shallow wells. Once that new deep well comes online, it will add about 4 million gallons per day, and it will reduce the need to use those shallow wells. Another department endeavor is the Southwest Arterial Water Main Extension Project, aimed at sparking development along the corridor. It is estimated to cost $1.6 million and should be completed during the fiscal year. We plan a lot of investment, and we plan to invest in the Southwest Arterial because we know that area is going to grow, Councilmember David Resnick said. When do you think we might start gaining from this investment? I realize we have high hopes. City Manager Mike Van Milligan said it is the only growth corridor available to the city, with topography limiting expansion to the north and south and the Mississippi River to the east. The state invested $130 million to build the Southwest Arterial, and it is time to leverage that investment, Van Milligan said. We anticipate that over the years, that development will create a lot of utility revenues and, of course, property tax revenue that will help keep property taxes down, Van Milligan said. People are not going to invest without water and sewer. Private lead service line replacement for 585 qualified low-income property owners will begin soon and cost $467,850 in fiscal year 2025. The total project cost is spread over 3 years and will cost $5.8 million. The city applied for federal funding that comes in the form of a forgivable loan through the state of Iowa. The loan is 49% forgivable, with the water department paying off the remaining 51% of the no-interest loan through its fees. It doesn't give us any satisfaction to set a rate increase at 12%, Van Milligan said. Would the rate increase have been less if we had not accessed that program? The answer is yes, but we also would not have replaced those lead service lines. Van Milligan said the goal is to replace all of the more than 3,000 lead service lines in the city, and officials are on the lookout for opportunities to defray some of that cost. Water and Resource Recovery Center has $66.4 million in capital improvements set to begin in fiscal year 2025, the most expensive of which is a Catfish Creek sewer shed project at $47 million. The Southwest Arterial Water and Sewer Project added to the need to enhance the water processing capability in the Catfish Creek area near the Water and Resource Recovery Center. That area also is seeing some residential development to its west. Terminal Street lift station improvements are listed at $6.5 million, while Chaplin Schmidt Island Sanitary Sewer and Lift Station improvements are set at $2.6 million to lay the groundwork for the island's redevelopment. The department continues its focus on odor abatement that has plagued residents over the past year. Chemical purchases of nearly $500,000 per year are slated for several consecutive years. I hope the citizens understand that we have done a lot of work and we are all ponying up to see if we can have fewer odors. $500,000 every year is substantial, Resnick said. Our last story on the front page of the Telegraph Herald today is entitled Federal Internet Stipends Set to Expire. 3,604 Dubuque County households participate in the Affordable Connectivity Program. This is written by Maia Bond of the Telegraph Herald. Thousands of tri-state area residents are expected to lose in the coming weeks the benefit of a federal program giving them discounts on their internet service bill. The Affordable Connectivity Program was born out of the COVID-19 pandemic, but without additional funding from Congress, is set to run out of money at the end of April. Participants may receive partial discounts in May, according to the program's website. The federal program gave eligible households a monthly discount of up to $30 for internet service and $75 per month for households on tribal lands. Whitney Sanger, Dubuque County Outreach and Communications Director for Hawkeye Area Community Action Program, said the Affordable Connectivity Program has definitely been utilized by HACAP's tri-state clients. It may seem like a minimal cost, but to them, it was a big impact, she said. Without that, it really hurts families struggling to make ends meet. Sanger said if residents have to pay more for their internet, that can mean picking up extra shifts, skipping meals, or falling behind on other bills. Also, the internet isn't just a way to access entertainment. It is often an essential tool for families to do schoolwork, work from home, pay bills, make appointments, she said. Internet access removes that transportation barrier that a lot of people also face, she said. Being able to connect in the comfort of your own home without having to take a bus, without having to take off work. According to data from the Universal Service Administrative Company, 124,054 Iowans were enrolled in the program at the time of its enrollment freeze. Data from January until February the 8th also shows 3,604 households in Dubuque County participating in the program. To qualify for the now expiring benefit, household income must have been at or below 200% of the federal poverty guidelines or participate in a variety of assistance programs, including Medicaid, housing choice vouchers, supplemental nutrition assistance program, or free and reduced price lunch programs. In Clayton County, Iowa, 369 households enrolled in the program during fiscal year 2024. A total of 643 Jackson County, Iowa residents were enrolled, and in Delaware County, 445 were enrolled. Data shows 1,530 residents enrolled in Grant County, Wisconsin, as did 479 in Joe Davies County, Illinois. According to data from the city of Dubuque, 1,834 residents have been served in fiscal year 2024 within the city. Kobe Culbertson, Dubuque Community Schools Chief Technology Officer, said losing the program will not only affect students, but the community as a whole. He said it was a successful and popular program, and the district advertised it to families regularly. I think they had a very successful program that was put in place by the federal government, and letting it sunshine is definitely going to have an impact, he said. In addition, the school district offers mobile hotspots that students can check out when they need reliable internet at home. Culbertson said the district also encourages students to utilize community resources such as Multicultural Family Center and local libraries for internet services. Chris Coleman, City of Dubuque Chief Information Officer, said the city created a website to advertise the program and create a convenient avenue to apply. However, if the federal program shutters, she said the city will likely add information on another available federal discount program called Lifeline. That program is available to households with an income at or below 135% of the federal poverty guidelines, which for a household of four people would be $42,120, or to participants of programs such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Medicaid, or Supplemental Security Income. Lifeline provides a $9.25 monthly discount on phone or internet bills. Congress has yet to make any significant strides in extending the life of the program, though two bills have been introduced that would allocate enough funds to keep the program going through 2024. The bills, which have three co-sponsors in the Senate and 221 in the House, would give $7 billion to the program. None of Iowa's representatives or senators have signed on to either bill. In an emailed statement, a spokesman for U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, said the bill has not yet been brought to the Senate floor or included in the fiscal year 2024 appropriations bills. Senator Grassley understands the importance of Iowans being connected to the internet and has supported legislation to make sure all Iowans have access to internet services, including through provisions in the bipartisan infrastructure law. He will closely evaluate any provision regarding internet affordability that comes before the Senate, the email states. In an emailed statement, a spokesperson for U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, a Republican from Iowa, said Hinson is willing to support extending the program, but not without changes that prevent fraud, prioritize high-need households, and ensure it is sustainable in the long term. Ensuring every family, farm, business, and school in rural Iowa has internet access is a top priority for me. I am focused on reforming ACP to make the program more effective and prevent fraud, ensuring that taxpayer dollars are used to maximize rural broadband access, Hinson said in an emailed statement. A spokesperson for Lumen Technologies, of which CenturyLink is part, said in an emailed statement that Lumen has encouraged Congress to renew the funding for the program. Lumen is communicating with our valued ACP customers and has sent notices with details about the wind down, including resources, information, and a path to chat with us for assistance with staying connected at an affordable rate, the statement says. Now from the Dubuque and Tri-State page, we have an article that is entitled, Dubuque Receives $8 Million Grant for B Branch Project. The funding will support improvements to the water pumping station at the 16th Street Detention Basin. This is written by Grace Nealand and Maia Bond of the Telegraph Herald. The City of Dubuque has secured an $8 million federal grant to help pay for a flood mitigation project along B Branch Creek. The grant was allocated through the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Pre-Disaster Mitigation Grant Program following a request for community project funding from U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, a Republican from Iowa, according to a news release. The $8 million will go toward the B Branch Stormwater Pumping Station project at the 16th Street Detention Basin Improvements are expected to cost $28 million and will include the construction of new floodgates and increasing and updating flood pumps, among other steps. While Dubuque has been a model for flood mitigation efforts, more must be done to protect the community from future disasters, Hinson said in the release. I was proud to secure $8 million for flood mitigation gates and pumps to build on the strong progress we've already made. The project is one phase of the larger B Branch Watershed Flood Mitigation Project. City officials expect to begin the public bidding process this year in hopes of completing the pump station project by the year 2027. Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said the project has been a long time coming. City officials originally hoped to start the project closer to 2020, but it was put on hold because of price increases and the other disruptions from the COVID-19 pandemic. We basically had to pull everything back and do it over again, he said. The goal is to update or replace infrastructure around the detention basin to prevent flooding incidents before they happen. The current system is working fine for now, Kavanaugh said, but the old equipment won't last forever. We're really pushing for this so that everything is where it needs to be in the puzzle of this flood mitigation project, he said. Darren Muring, Water and Resource Recovery Center director, said the grant is a major piece of the funding pie that takes more of the burden off the city. He said this grant will be used alongside with the $7.7 million U.S. Economic Development Administration grant awarded in September and about $8.2 million from the $98.5 million awarded to the city in 2013 from the Iowa Flood Mitigation Board. That leaves about $4.2 million still needed to fully fund the project, he said. The project will also go out for bid this year, and he anticipates construction to be completed about the end of 2026. The project is the last major improvement for the overall watershed project, he said, and is a key piece necessary to the system. This facility is right now the weak link in that system, Muring said. Man who was accused of attempted murder faces federal weapons charge is the title of our next article. A Wisconsin man now faces a federal weapons charge, which prompted the dismissal of his attempted murder case in Dubuque. Kenneth M. Moore, age 49, of Monroe, Wisconsin, recently was charged in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Iowa with unlawful transportation of firearms. No plea had been entered as of Tuesday afternoon per online court documents. Monroe previously was charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with attempted murder, going armed with intent, control of a firearm by a felon, and assault while displaying a dangerous weapon. He pleaded not guilty to those charges, but the case recently was dismissed by Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zraini Ackley on a motion by prosecutors who cited the federal case. The state charges stemmed from an August 4th, 2023 incident in which Dubuque police responded to the 2400 block of Stafford Street for reports of shots fired. Court documents state police were told Monroe had come to a Stafford Street residence and a disturbance ensued. The tenant of the residence attempted to push Moore up the sidewalk and Moore fired a handgun toward the front porch, documents state. The tenant reported Moore then entered a vehicle and, as it drove past, pointed the handgun at her residence, documents state. Surveillance footage provided to police shows Moore arriving at the residence and getting into a disturbance with Lance H. Hayes, age 31, of Dubuque, on the porch as two individuals try to separate them, documents state. The footage shows a single shot fired toward Hayes, documents state, at which point Hayes retrieved a handgun from inside the home. Multiple gunshots then were heard, documents state. Hayes previously was sentenced to probation in connection with the incident after pleading guilty to possession of a firearm by a felon and reckless use of a firearm. Now we have four short articles under the News in Brief heading. First, Southwestern Wisconsin District selects new superintendent. Dateline is Hazel Green, Wisconsin. A longtime area educator has been selected as the next superintendent of Southwestern Wisconsin School District in Hazel Green. David Hoger will assume the role July 1st, according to a news release. He will replace current superintendent John Costello, who is set to retire in June after 13 years with the district. Hoeger was one of three finalists selected for the position alongside applicants Kyle Lutke and Steve Lutz. The release states that the district's final selection was based on two rounds of interviews as well as community feedback. Hoeger began his professional career as a math teacher at Dubuque's St. Joseph's Elementary School in 1989. He went on to teach at Jones Junior High School as well as Hempstead and Western Dubuque High Schools. He later served as assistant principal and then principal at Western Dubuque. He has been a school superintendent since 2017 and currently serves as a shared superintendent for both Maquoketa Valley and Edgewood-Colesburg school districts. Dubuque man sentenced to probation for domestic assault. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for a January domestic assault. David C. Miller, age 47, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Associate Judge Mark Hostager in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of domestic assault causing injury. If he violates the terms of his probation, Miller faces up to 2 years in prison. The charges stem from a January 28th incident in which court documents state police responded to the area of White and East 24th Streets for a report of an assault. There, court documents state Kamisha L. Dixon, age 37, of Dubuque, was found covered in blood and to have multiple injuries to her head. Dixon told police she had been sleeping at her residence when Miller walked into the bedroom and began assaulting her. Miller was arrested after an hour-long standoff with police, and documents state he was arrested with dried blood on his hands. Next, internationally known Queen tribute band returning to Dubuque. A popular tribute band is set to perform again in Dubuque later this year. Killer Queen, a tribute to Queen, will perform at 7 p.m. October the 4th at Dubuque's Five Flags Center, 405 Main Street. Led by frontman Patrick Myers, who bears an uncanny resemblance to Freddie Mercury, Killer Queen formed in June 1993. By 1995, Killer Queen secured a residency in London's Strand Theatre, becoming the first tribute band to have a show in the West End. The group has performed in Dubuque several times in the past since making its American debut in 2016. The group most recently appeared at Five Flags Center in 2022. General admission tickets can be purchased online starting at 10 a.m. Friday, April the 12th at tinyurl.com/dbqqueen or in person at the Five Flags Center box office. And Grammy-nominated string band coming to Jackson County venue, Dateline Maquoketa, Iowa. A Grammy-nominated string band is set to perform this summer at a Jackson County music venue. Yonder Mountain String Band will perform at 8 p.m. August the 21st at Codfish Hollow Barnstormers, 5013 288th Avenue in rural Maquoketa, according to an online announcement. The five-person band formed in 1998 and plays bluegrass music blended with elements of rock, alternative, and psychedelic music. The group has released several studio albums and completed multiple nationwide tours. In 2022, the band received a Grammy nomination for its track Get Yourself Outside, and more recently, the group was inducted into the Colorado Music Hall of Fame. Tickets are $45 and go on sale Friday, April the 12th. Visit codfishhollowbarnstormers.com for more information. And from the police blotter, Jeffrey J. Miller, age 50, of 90 East 26th Street, was arrested at 8:49 p.m. Monday at his residence on a charge of second-degree harassment. You're listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now we'll take a look at today's opinion page, and we have an other view from Tim Muthart, who is part of the Dubuque Coalition for Nonviolence. and it is entitled, Iowa Lawmakers Should Reject Effort to Arm School Staff. Do you want your child's teacher to be packing a loaded firearm in school? How about your grandchild's teacher? That's what the Iowa legislators linked to the gun lobby want to do, and few Iowans know anything about it. What could possibly go wrong, they say? Consider these facts. A vetted research study published in June 2019 in the Journal of Adolescent Health found no evidence that the presence of resource officers in schools lessened the severity of school shooting incidents. There's no evidence armed teachers would be any more effective. There have been many incidents where loaded guns fall out of teachers' pockets or are inadvertently left in a school restroom. Such incidents are highlighted in this report, giffords.org/report/every-incident-of-mishandled-guns-in-schools. Vetted research shows that highly trained law enforcement are only 18% to 40% accurate when attempting to stop an armed perpetrator with their firearms. Even if school personnel were trained, the missing shots in a crowded classroom could injure or kill our children. Given these facts, why are Iowa legislators pushing to pass HF 2586, the Arm Our Teachers Bill? In fact, the Iowa House of Representatives has already passed this bill, and it is now in the hands of the Iowa Senate and governor. Those legislators who have bothered to respond to my question tell me they do this to protect our Second Amendment rights. In other words, they prioritize gun rights over the lives of our children. What should we do to protect our children in Iowa schools? How about adopting extreme risk protection laws to stop people who show warning signs of danger to themselves or others from accessing and buying guns? Promoting secure storage awareness, which can address the most common source of guns used in school gun violence, those taken from home. Investing in mental health professionals in our schools and strengthening crisis intervention programs with trained, skilled, certified mental health professionals who can identify and intervene when a student is a risk to themselves or others. If you believe the lives of our children should have priority over gun rights, then contact Iowa senators and the Iowa governor to tell them to reject HF 2586. You will find Senate contact information at legis.iowa.gov/legislators/senate, and for the governor at governor.iowa.gov. Please stand up for our children over the rights of the gun lobby and do it quickly before the imminent Senate vote. Now we turn to today's obituaries, and first we remember Amy L. Bainbridge, age 52, of Galena, Illinois, who passed away Friday, March 15, 2024, at Midwest Medical Center, Galena, after a long battle with ALS. A funeral service will be held at noon Saturday, April 13, 2024, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, where friends may gather from 10 a.m. until the time of service. Amy was born October 28, 1971, in Burlington, Iowa, the daughter of Steve and Jeanette Millay. Amy graduated from Mediapolis High School with the class of 1990. She attended Southeastern Community College, earning a medical assistant degree, followed by her LPN degree in 1995. She then attended Iowa Wesleyan College in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, earning her Bachelor of Science in Nursing in 1997. She was united in marriage to Mark P. Bainbridge on August 24, 2022 in Burlington. Amy worked at Klein Center as an LPN, Burlington Medical Center as a surgical nurse, Findlay Hospital as a recovery room nurse, and finally MVA as the office manager. Burial will be held at a later date. Cremation rites have been accorded. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Next, we remember Mary Jean Vaughn, age 88, of Normal, Illinois, who passed away Saturday, April 6, 2024, peacefully at Sugar Creek Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Normal, Illinois. Her memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, April the 11th, 2024, at Epiphany Catholic Church, Normal, Illinois, where visitation will be 1 hour prior to services. Carmody Flynn Funeral Home of Bloomington, Illinois, is assisting the family with arrangements. A private burial will follow services at Holy Cross Cemetery in Normal, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to Epiphany Church or Epiphany School, or for masses at the church, all of Normal, Illinois. To express condolences online and see additional information, please visit www.carmodyflynn.com. Now we remember Mary Regina Jeannie Johnson, age 93 of Dubuque, who passed away Saturday, April the 6th at Hawkeye Care Center. A rosary will be recited at 9 a.m. on Saturday, April 13th at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church, where visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. Mass of Christian Burial, Reverend Brian Delart will officiate. Interment will be at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday at Sacred Heart Catholic Cemetery, Fillmore, Iowa. Jeannie was born March 29, 1931, in Fillmore, the daughter of Oscar and Catherine Johnson. She was resident of the Cascade and Dubuque area for many years. Jeannie was a member of St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church. She enjoyed painting, arts and crafts, puzzles, and poetry. She had a sweet tooth and liked to watch old westerns. Jeannie also enjoyed playing bingo every week. The family would like to thank the staff at Hospice of Dubuque and Hawkeye Care Center for their care of Jeannie. Now we remember Frank Jerome Sarazin Jr., S-A-R-A-Z-I-N, who passed away on April the 2nd, 2024. He was preceded in death by his wife Sharon and one grandson, survived by his four children, two grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. Respecting his final wishes, there will be no service. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home is assisting the family. Now we remember Mary Jeanette McCarthy, age 85, of Dubuque, who died on Monday, April the 8th, 2024. A wake service will take place at 9:30 a.m. Monday, April 15th at Sacred Heart Chapel at Sisters of the Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary, where visitation will follow until 11 a.m. Services will follow at 11 a.m. Burial will take place in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the And we remember Bernadette Hilby, age 91, of Dubuque, who died on Monday, April the 8th, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, April the 12th, at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, and from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday, April the 13th, at Resurrection Catholic Church, where a Mass of Christian Burial will follow. Burial will take place in Resurrection Cemetery. Now we remember Deanna E. Gulyash, age 86, of Dubuque, who died on Monday, April the 8th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, April the 12th, at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Now we remember Angela L. Romberg, age 51, who died on Friday, April the 5th, 2024. Private family services will be held. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory at 2595 Rockdale Road is assisting the family. I'm going to read one article from the Tri-State page before moving on to sports. It's entitled, Dubuque Officials Plan Additional Investment to Solve Water Plant Stench. It's written by Andy Piper of the Telegraph Herald. The issue of odor emanating from the Dubuque Water and Resource Recovery Center is being addressed, city officials say, but it could take additional investment to continue that trend. During budget hearings Monday night for the city's Water Planning and Information Technology Departments, as well as Water and Resource Recovery Center, Dubuque City Council members heard from the facility's director and shared feedback they'd received from residents about the stench. The stink arose when a portion of the facility's anaerobic digesters failed due to errors by a third-party maintenance contractor. Workers at the facility were forced to load waste product temporarily into a storage tank that wasn't able to contain its smell. That led to the extraordinary odors coming from our facility, said Darren Muring, director of the WWRC. People certainly in this area had to endure it, and people in downtown Dubuque were impacted by it. All four of the city's digesters became fully functional again on April the 2nd, and the issue has abated but is not solved. I don't want to give people the sense that we have done something miraculous to make those odors disappear, Muring said. It is just part of the process, and we still need to make a priority of handling that waste. We are working on several options with how to do that. Muring said feeding stored waste into the system must be controlled and monitored so it does not overload the system. In the meantime, discussions with contractors are underway to secure bids to remove and dispose of the waste. The facility plans to invest $462,000 into chemical treatments that reduce odors. Hydrogen peroxide and ferric chloride will be added at different steps of the process for odor control. Digester cleaning for $75,000 also will take place on a scheduled basis. The chemical treatments and cleanings are recurring costs each year that will add up over time. This is not just about odor, Councilmember Katie Wethel said. This is about the health of our population and the minds of Spain. People should be able to go on a hike and not have odor. The odor has been exceptional and beyond what should be expected. The citizens of Dubuque deserve to breathe clean air. If we can do more permanent fixes for this problem to avoid that amount of money every year as a recurring cost, to me, that is a no-brainer if it financially makes sense. If we have ways to knock that number down over time, I am all for it. Councilmember Susan Farber said she continues to receive feedback from constituents regarding the odor issue and shared a text she received on Sunday from a resident of South Grandview Avenue. He said that there have been no complaints because there has been little or no odor emanating from the sewage wastewater treatment plant. Unfortunately, Sunday night I went to a restaurant to get some carryout for basketball food, and it was the first time I had smelled the sewer for quite a while. On a scale of 10, it was about a 5. This morning, I walked my dog and could smell a sewer odor, but it was mostly under a chemical mask. Not good, but not terrible, Farber said, read to the council. We're getting feedback on a regular basis. The smell is easing, and that is good, Farber added. Councilmember Rick Jones said he received resident feedback as well and shared a different take. This is not a lot dissimilar from somebody building a nice house right next to the airport and then being disappointed that the airplanes make noise, Jones said. Wastewater treatment plants smell bad sometimes. A lot of housing has happened close to it. That's what people chose to do, and it is a consequence of living there. Some days it's going to smell bad, and that's just a fact, and quite frankly, something they volunteered for. I don't mean to be vindictive or mean to those neighbors because they shouldn't have to deal with it for as many days as they have. Muring said it will take time and money to better fix the problem, and discussions are ongoing. Council members offered their support moving forward. I do appreciate the patience of the community because when things stink, it's hard to concentrate. It's hard to do anything, said Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh. These are challenges, but with that said, we can do these things unless we invest in them. You want to come up with real solutions that are lasting. That takes some time, and it takes a budgeting process. I appreciate that we are getting there. The City Council is holding budgetary hearings with various city departments. The public hearing to approve the FY 2025 budget is set for April the 15th. Now it's time to move on to the sports page. We'll start with boys prep soccer. Mustangs take back city crown. Hempstead wins first city title since 2016, off to best start since 2015. This is written by Danny Miller. For the first time since 2016, Dubuque Hempstead holds the city crown. A feat worthy of celebration for sure, but immediately following the Mustangs' 5-1 victory at rival Dubuque Wallert at Steele Field on Tuesday, second-year coach Alex Lee let his team know there's loftier goals in store. Biggest thing for us is making the state tournament, Lee said. Obviously, conference too. I don't know the last time we won the conference. We want to host some games in the preseason, too. We want some teams to come to our place where I think we're pretty hard to beat. Drew Lewis, who entered Tuesday second in Class 4A in goals scored, netted two more to up his season total to 9. Dennis Masinovich also scored his 6th and 7th goals of the year, and Bryce Rowling headed one home as the Mustangs largely controlled the match's tempo. The Mustangs, now 5 wins, 1 loss on the year, are off to their best start since 2015, the last time they reached the state tournament. Hempstead defeated Western Dubuque 5-0 on March 28th and Senior 5-4 on Saturday, clinching it with Tuesday's victory over Wallert. "It feels great," Masinovich said. "We're going to go enjoy it for sure and use it as a motivator." Playing just its second match of the season, Rasmussen expects his young Wallert team to continue to grow as the season progresses. "The biggest thing is we're growing," Rasmussen said. "Our one senior is our keeper. Everybody else out there on the field are juniors, sophomores, and freshmen. It's a young group, and we're just going to keep on building." In college baseball, Duhawks survive twice. Olszewski's walk-off lifts Loras to game one victory over UD. This is written by Jim Leitner. Jake Olszewski entered Tuesday afternoon with just 2 hits and 28 at-bats in his young Loras College baseball career. But the freshman from Germantown, Wisconsin, came through like a seasoned veteran in the bottom of the 9th inning. His bases-loaded pinch-hit single lifted the Duhawks to a 9-8 victory over the University of Dubuque in American Rivers Conference play at Petrakis Park. Loras completed the sweep with a 10-8 win in the nightcap. Trevor Seagraves opened the bottom of the 10th with a hit batsman and took second on a wild pitch, prompting Dubuque to intentionally walk Daniel Rogers. Nick DiBenedetto loaded the bases with a bunt single, and Olszewski pulled a one-out single through a drawn-in infield before being mobbed by teammates after he touched first base. Both teams rallied in the 9th. In Dubuque's 9th inning rally, Micah O'Neill reached on a hit batsman, and Daniel Mahler laced a double over the bag at third to chase Loras reliever Caden Shive in favor of Danny Heimer. Colin Husko promptly greeted Heimer with a 2-run double to left center to tie the game at 7-7. Aiden Elfering followed with a base hit to left center, then stole second. Heimer fanned Jake Seekender for the first out, but J.D. Schaefer flied out to right center to drive in the go-ahead run. Dubuque's Johnny Blake, the reigning ARC Athlete of the Week, came on in relief with 2 men on base and 1 out in the bottom of the 9th. Loras's Jack Cullen drew a bases-loaded walk to tie the game before Blake struck out Max McCallum to end the threat and force extra innings. The Spartans took an early 2-0 lead in the opener on a Lake Burgos 2-run single to right field after Husko and Elfering reached on base hits, but Loras immediately responded with 5 runs in the bottom half. Rogers tied the game with his 5th home run of the season, a 2-run shot to right field after Seagraves' single. Jack Carney put the Duhawks ahead with a bases-loaded hit batsman. Cullen followed with an RBI fielder's choice, and Alex Sandoval made it 5-2 with an RBI single up the middle. O'Neill got one of those runs back with a no-doubt home run to left field in the top of the 2nd. It marked his 1st homer of the season. But Loras stretched the lead to 6-3 in the bottom of the 4th. McCallum laced a double inside the left field line and came around to score on DiBenedetto's single to right. 2 innings later, the Duhawks loaded the bases on singles by Seagraves and Rogers and a DiBenedetto walk before Cody Sunny forced in a run with a walk to make it 7-3. But reliever Patrick Rafferty avoided further damage by coaxing Vince Polizzi into an inning-ending 5-2-3 double play. The Spartans pulled within 7-5 with a pair of runs in the 7th. Elfering plated a run with a single to left, and another came across when Jake Seekender reached on an error. In the nightcap, the Spartans opened the scoring in the top of the 2nd. Seekender singled up the middle and scored when Kyle Rady laced a double to left center for a 1-0 lead. The DuHawks responded in the bottom half after DiBenedetto singled and Cody Sonny doubled along the right field line. Vince Polizzi drove in the first run with a sacrifice fly to center, and Jack Carney put Loris ahead with an RBI single up the middle. Olszewski followed with a towering two-run home run to right to make it 4-1. Loris added on an inning later after Seagraves doubled to left and Rogers reached on a bloop single. DiBenedetto doubled to left to make it 5-1, and Polizzi followed with a RBI single up the middle for a five-run cushion. Dubuque pulled within 6-4 on a three-run sixth. McGuire Fitzgerald singled in a run. Burgos scored on an error, and O'Neill added an RBI single. An inning later, Elfering singled and scored on a Seekender ground out to pull the Spartans within 6-5. The DuHawks added cushion in the bottom half. DiBenedetto laced a two-run double, Polizzi tripled in a run, and Carney added an RBI single to make it 10-5. Dubuque responded again in the eighth. Daniel Mahler ripped a two-run single to left, and Husko followed with an RBI single to cut the deficit to 10-8 before Burgos flied out with the bases loaded to end the threat. Now from the local and area roundup, Cardinals win 10 events at River Queen Relays. Taylor Wing, Casey Williams, and Cora Weidel each claimed individual titles and were a part of multiple winning relay teams as Maquoketa won a whopping 10 events to claim the Class B team title, 159-140, over Dubuque Wallert in the River Queen Relays on Tuesday in Clinton, Iowa. Wing, Weidel, and Justice Armbruster won single individual events, while Isabel Harden was a multi-event individual champion. The Cardinals won relay titles in the sprint medley, shuttle hurdle, 4x200, and 4x100. Riley Steffen and Olivia Hilby won individual events for Wallert. The Golden Eagles also took first in the 4x400 and 4x800. Bellevue's Sydney Tath claimed a silver in the long jump. In the Class A division, Hempstead's Julia Gell won the 3,000. The Mustangs also claimed gold in the 4x800 and 4x400. Dubuque Senior got runner-up finishes from Emily Gorton and Campbell Drapeau. Hempstead's Allie Darter took gold in the wheelchair 200, 400, and shot put. In prep softball, Galena 8, West Carroll 1 at Galena. Ava Hahn struck out 16 and allowed just two hits and one run over seven innings as Galena topped West Carroll. Hahn also went 2-for-4 at the dish, while Addison Zmich went 3-for-4. Fulton 12, Scales Mound / River Ridge. Arnie Richmond went 2-for-4. Sarah Winter doubled twice, but Scales Mound River Ridge fell to Fulton. Belmont 15, Schulzberg 0. Callie Jo Hodgson struck out 7 over 4 innings, and Bailey Mester tossed 1 scoreless as the pair combined for a 5-inning no-hitter as Belmont blanked Schulzberg. And Barneveld 4, Potosi Cassville 0 at Potosi, Wisconsin. Hannah Esch tossed a 7-inning no-hitter with 10 strikeouts as Barneveld blanked Potosi Cassville on Monday. In prep baseball, Ithaca 8, Potosi Cassville 2. Ithaca scored 7 runs in the top of the 7th to break open a tight game and pull away for the win. East Dubuque 3, Warren Stockton 2. Carver Commence went 3-for-4 with a run scored, and Angel Reyes struck out 12 and didn't allow an earned run as East Dubuque edged Warren Stockton. Galena 11, West Carroll 1. Owen Heffel went 2-for-3, struck out 12 over 6 innings to earn the win as the Pirates won via the mercy rule. Fulton 8, River Ridge / Scales Mound 6. Caden Dewar and Joe Winter had 2 hits apiece, but it wasn't enough for River Ridge / Mound to overcome Fulton. In boys tennis, Dubuque Wallert 8, Waterloo West 1. Rowan Martineau won at number one singles and teamed with Charlie Curtis at number one doubles to lead the Golden Eagles in a convincing win. Cal Martineau, Jensen Hill, Evan Anderson, and Chase Miller also earned singles victories for Wallert. In girls tennis, Cedar Rapids Prairie 7, Dubuque Senior 2. Halia Christensen won at number 3 singles and teamed with Liz Nielsen for a win at number 2 doubles, but the Hawks downed the Rams. And in college softball, Luther 7, Dubuque 0, and 10-2. Allison Bella, Bailey Ford, and Trisha Spora had 2 hits apiece in Game 2, but Luther scored 9 runs over the final 2 innings to complete the sweep. Grace Stevenson went 2-for-4 in the opener for the Spartans. And Clark, 4, Judson, 3, and then 10-7. Former Dubuque senior ace Meredith Gatto tossed 3 shutout innings in relief, and former Hempstead standout Mallory Huseman doubled and drove a run to lead the Pride to a Game 1 win. Emma Hodnett went 3-for-4 and 2 RBIs in the nightcap as the Pride completed the sweep. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.